Hello, and welcome to Tantrum, our report on CHMA 106.9 FM, broadcasting from Sackville, New Brunswick, the heart of the Maritimes, and the traditional lands of the Mi'kmaq people, unceded in treaties of peace and friendship first signed with settlers in 1725. I'm Erica Butler. It's Tuesday, August 24th. Coming up on today's show, a National Historic Site in Dorchester may have new owners. Chandler House, also known as Rocklin, is a historic home in Dorchester built in 1831. The home was recently listed for sale with Sackville-based agent Chris Farella, who says an offer has been accepted on the property. Today we talk with Farella and also revisit a conversation with Katie Yeoman, whose family lived in the house for decades until the late 90s. That's coming up right after these local news updates. As of 8 a.m. on Wednesday, any New Brunswickers who are not fully vaccinated will be required to self-isolate when they enter Nova Scotia. Premier-designate Tim Houston made the announcement at a news conference Monday, revoking the Atlantic bubble status for New Brunswickers, who will now fall under the same rules as people from other provinces in Canada. Case counts in New Brunswick continue to soar, with 58 new counts reported since Saturday. Over half of those are in Zone 1, the Moncton region. Three people are now in hospital with COVID-19 in the province. Provincial Public Health continues to plea with New Brunswickers to get vaccinated, citing disproportional rates of COVID-19 infections in those who are not fully vaccinated. About 35% of New Brunswickers have not had two shots of a COVID-19 vaccine, but since July 1st, 89% of new cases are from that group. CHMA has asked the province to share the rates for people who are partially vaccinated with one shot and those who are not vaccinated at all, but the province refused to share that information. About 25% of New Brunswickers have not had any shot of a COVID-19 vaccine, which includes anyone under 12 years of age. The province also refused to share the number of recent COVID-19 cases in those under 12 who are not eligible for the vaccine. The province says it is, quote, providing information at a level that cannot permit the re-identification of individuals, but is sufficient for the public to be able to protect themselves and others. RCMP officers in Sackville and across Canada are in line for a big pay bump now that their union, the National Federation of Police, has signed a first-ever collective agreement with the federal government. The town of Sackville is gearing up to absorb the financial hit. Treasurer Michael Beale says the town does not yet know how much it will owe the RCMP to cover back pay. The new contract is retroactive, starting with a pay increase in 2017. The total cumulative increase from 2017 to 2022 is just shy of 19%. For a constable, that's a $20,000 increase from a maximum salary of $86,000 in 2016 to $106,000 in 2022. For a sergeant in the RCMP, it's an increase of $24,000 over the years for a maximum salary of about $103,000 in 2016 to $127,000 in 2022. Michael Beale says that depending on the amount owed, the back pay could be covered by a surplus in the 2021 budget, the town's operating reserve, which is made up of past surpluses, and or an allocation in the upcoming 2022 budget. Beale says he doesn't want to speculate on what the final number is for the town of Sackville, as that needs to come from the RCMP, but that he will share details when they're available. At the August regular council meeting, Sackville Town Councillor Bill Evans took some time to ask about how Sackvillians should be calling the police. He wasn't referring to emergencies, but rather the difficulty in getting through when reporting non-emergencies, where time is still of the essence.
I don't think I've ever actually called 911, but I've never heard anyone complain that that's not quick. The problem comes when you want to report something that's timely. You see an ATV on the street or you see someone speeding or whatever. Who do you call? Which number do you call? And I'm not sure. I have several RCMP numbers in my phone, and I think if they could make it clear how best for us to report stuff, like which numbers, because they have said many times, and I have told people, they can't fix, just like our staff, we can't fix things if people don't tell us about it. So we all have an obligation to make it work. So we should report things if we expect them to deal with them.
Councillor Sabine Dietz said she has found the wait to get through to the RCMP discouraging, and that on weekends, she is likely to reach someone on duty in Shediac instead of Sackville.
it's been often a dead end or a dead end that ends with a call the next day or the day after. So I think there is an issue there, and I think I agree we need to know who to call when and how quickly will this actually get followed up, because I gave up. It's too slow.
The number for the Southeast District RCMP's Sackville Detachment is listed as 364-5023, and more often than not, it will take you to an automated system for the Southeast District, which after some time will put you through to an operator who can take your information and even possibly put you through to a detachment. When CHMA asked Constable Brian Villers, he recommended a call to 533-5151, which is the number listed online for the Shediac Detachment of the Southeast District. He said whether or not your call gets picked up depends on who is on duty and what's happening at the time. People can also call a provincial number, 1-888-506-RCMP, to get dispatched to a detachment. There's an outbreak of COVID-19 in the Shediac Jail. Public Health says one positive case was found on Friday, August 20th, after which all inmates and close contact staff were tested. There are now 4 confirmed cases, including both inmates and staff. Staff from other centers are being assigned to fill in for staff who are currently self-isolating. Public Health says the movement of inmates within the facility is being restricted and court appearances are being held through video conferences. One inmate who appeared in court via video conference on Monday said the facility was under 24-hour lockdown and inmates were not able to leave their cells. People are often held on remand in the Shediac Jail, awaiting trial or court proceedings. The facility is designed to house 180 adult offenders and employ 107 staff people. In late January, the Bank of Nova Scotia published a notice of auction for Chandler House in Dorchester, after its then-owner, Ivan Ng, defaulted on the mortgage. The house, also known as Rockland, is a national historic site built in 1831 for Edward Baron Chandler, a father of Confederation and New Brunswick's 5th lieutenant governor before his death in 1880. Sackville realtor Chris Farella got the call from the bank to list the property. I called up Chris to find out more about Chandler House. He started out talking about how he realized he was about to take on the task of selling a historic site.
It's funny, I got the phone call and it was from the bank and they asked me if I'd be interested in taking the listing. And I've been doing this for 2 years now. It's actually my second career. So when you're starting out, you take listings. It's just kind of what you do. I never even thought for a second that that was the house I'd be going to. So I'm driving from Sackville where I live and I'm driving up the road and I'm going, 5,000. I turn the corner and I realize where I'm going. I'm like, holy smokes. And it was actually a real game changer, because you don't think you have an opportunity to deal with one of the fathers of Confederation's homes. And all of a sudden your mind races. Like, okay, this is a completely different beast. So it was awesome. And I fell in love with the house. Like, it's almost like I got to the point where I was saying hello to it every time I walked through the door. It's really, really cool.
Now, I had thought that it was that the bank had put it up for sale back in the winter, but this is more of a proper listing.
Yeah, I don't actually know what the bank did before, because it's one of those things where unless it's something that affects me, I'm diving into different ponds, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. So what they did in the past, I do not know. But when they called me this time, I mean, they were very good about how they wanted me to list it. They wanted me to treat it like any other listing. So that's essentially what I did. I treated the bank as if they were my client, and then I treated people coming in through the door the exact same way. So it was a much different process. It was to the point where I was finding people roaming around on the grounds while I was showing the house to other people. It was crazy. Wow. Yeah, it was awesome.
When did the listing go live?
The listing went live on Friday, and actually the without saying too much, because there's legalities involved, they agreed to deal with a client today, this morning.
Oh, wow. So if anyone hearing this was holding out hope that they might be, I don't know, making an offer, then it might not be. Well, I guess it's stay tuned kind of thing.
And stay tuned. See if it all happens. Is the very, very best way to say it. Yeah, mm-hmm. As you know, in this business, you have to be respectful to the process and you have to be respectful to all the legalities involved. But as it sits right now, it's a pending offer. from a really wonderful little family, and I'm hoping for them that everything goes smoothly and it becomes a home again. Because I think the one thing about that place is it's a family home.
Right.
Everybody sees it as this grand building, but at the root of it, it's a home that the man lived in almost his entire life. So it's pretty. It's meant to be with a family.
Yeah. So it hasn't had too many owners. And I gather the last owner was it Ivan Ng did a fair amount of work. So what kind of what kind of shape was it in? It's a very old house. So how does it look?
It's in when you're dealing with a heritage property, there's a lot of different things involved. So doing it correctly is paramount. So things like the roof, it's got a wonderful, beautiful slate roof. The electrical was all redone. So in old houses, you run into situations with knob and tube and things like that that insurance companies really do not like. So all of that stuff was cleaned up and fixed. The air exchange, the heating units, all of the little things that old houses tend to suffer from were done correctly. So the gentleman who owned it prior did a fantastic job. You never want to see anything like this. And, it was actually, I was very respectful of the fact that somebody lost a bit of a dream. And I was always quick to point that out to people when they came through the home that regardless of what they're seeing, that they should be respectful that somebody sank a lot into it. And so I made sure to point out the things that were done by the previous owner and that they were done right, and to give them at least the props that I felt it was due. It's never a good thing in these situations. You just hope that it doesn't happen again, but it is life, right? Especially with COVID. You never know if that affected anything.
Yes, it's true.
Yeah.
Now, we've had a hot real estate market in Zachville, and are things still heating up? Are they evening out, or what's the prognosis?
Yeah, it's a very interesting market, actually. I think people that had inventory did very well because there was a demand for the inventory. So a lot of people who had things for a long time were able to move them because people were willing to take different chances on things because there wasn't much stock available. So when there's no stock available, it seems like a super hot market. And then the rumors start getting spreading that you can't buy anything because the minute it goes on sale, it gets sold. So for somebody like me who is probably a bit more on the buyer side, I like working with clients and helping them relocate from out of province and in into New Brunswick. And I like finding homes for people. It became a little bit more difficult because the stock wasn't there. The market itself is, it's still good. I try to educate all my clients quickly that pay attention. Just because you're from out of province doesn't mean you have to pay any more than what something is worth. There's a lot of lessons involved in real estate. Sometimes the heart takes over when the head should be really in charge. And sometimes the head overthinks when things are really good. So, it's my job to kind of navigate all that stuff too in a market that is moving very, very, very quickly.
All right. So I guess we'll wait and see if this I guess pending offer or whatever we want to call it, comes through. Yep. But you said people were around looking and you show there was lots of interest, was there, during the time it was on the market?
Yeah, it was essentially from the minute it got listed to the minute that the bank accepted an offer. I was pretty much there from 9 a.m. till whenever my wife called and said, should you come home and eat? Which is great. I mean, that's what you kind of want. It gives you that. It's very exciting. And plus, like I said, you end up falling in love with a building like that. It has something in it. When you walk through it, it's got a vibe. It's got a feel. And you start to imagine who must have been in these rooms. What must the conversations have been like? I mean, this is a gentleman who attended every single one of the Confederation meetings. He was fighting with the people that are on our money. So your mind starts to go to all these different places. And then you find old toys and you find all these little things that are kind of left around and you realize it was a seat of politics. It was also a family home where there were people playing, there were families, there were all the things that you and I deal with every day. It's an amazing thing. It really is. And I think people should think about homes like that. They're not just purchasing bricks and mortar. They're buying things that have stories infused in them. So, it's pretty cool.
All right, Chris. Well, I mean, I really appreciate you telling us about this, and hopefully you'll keep us up to date on if this deal goes through.
Well, I hope it does. Like I said, you leave everything to the real estate gods and you just do your work as best you can and hope everything works out. They're a wonderful family and they'd be a super asset to the community if things work out. So fingers crossed for everybody. It's been a wonderful process. It really has.
That was Sackville realtor Chris Varela, who's been representing the Bank of Nova Scotia as they go through the process of selling Chandler House in Dorchester. Katie Yeoman's family lived in Chandler House, or Rockland, for decades before it was sold to Ivan Ng in 1997. She was two when the family moved in, and the house has been vacant for years before that. Back in February, I called her up to find out what it was like to grow up in a National Historic Site. Katie Yeoman, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, you're welcome.
Now, your history with Chandler House, or Rockland, goes way back. Tell us about how it started.
It's actually a bit of a longer story than people realize. My father's father was the Anglican rector at the church across the road from Rockland, the house in question, and they used to visit the people who were living there at the time, the Teed families, and he, as a little kid, had thought it was the most glamorous place he had ever seen, and it was, I always call it Dad's dream house, and he had this longing that one day he would grow up and live there, and then 20-some years later, it was for sale, and guess what? He did grow up and live there.
Wow, isn't that amazing? So your family moved in the late 50s?
Yeah, 59.
1959. And you were just a young girl at that point?
I was two. There were, at that point, five of us, all under the age of six. And there we were in this big old house, and not one of us could even reach the door handles.
Wow.
Yeah. And I remember, we spent a lot of time saying, Mommy, Mommy, I can't get through the door.
Wow. It must have been like a big project to take on. I'm just imagining buying an older home like that with all those kids. Wow.
Yeah, it must have been. I can't imagine how they did it. It was not in good shape. It had been empty for quite a while before we moved there. And so they had quite a lot to contend with besides us. It did need a lot of repair. But they, little by little, they kept at it. And the house historically was remarkably intact, partly, I think, because it hadn't changed hands a lot. It only changed hands once from Edward Chandler, who had built it, to the family between the Teeds and then to us. So historically, it was remarkably accurate for the time period it was built, 1831.
Now, and so your parents went about restoring it. I mean, there couldn't have been that many changes to it, but I guess it certainly would have needed a lot of care at that point.
Yeah, more than the changes, because it's really a beautiful house just on its own bones. But what it needed was to have it made strong again. When we first moved in, there was paper peeling off the walls, and I remember one time sitting at the dinner table and part of the ceiling fell down. This beautiful carved plaster ceiling, and
wow.
things like that. The plumbing would give out, but little by little we got there, and it was one of those houses that when people came to the door and came in, they always said, "Oh, this is such a welcoming house."
Oh, isn't that nice?
Yeah.
So your family lived there, I mean, you grew up there. You've right up until it got sold in 1997.
Right. We went to school there and lived in the house, and Dad died in 89, and then Mom ran it as a bed and breakfast until she sold it in 97.
So, I mean, let me just ask you a bit about the earlier history of that house that you've researched and written a bit about it. Can you tell me what you learned about the house?
The research, what I had written about it was mostly about our time living there, but it was built by Chandler not long after he came here. There was a funny local story at the time when we were kids. I remember people telling us there was this story that he had actually come to the village. He and his wife only had enough money for one horse. They were both riding the same horse, and they had rented a cabin from Keeler of the Keeler House Museum. And I think Keeler Was he a lawyer too? Anyway, Chandler was a lawyer, and then suddenly they built this big fancy house and had tons of money, and there was this local story that they had discovered Acadian treasure. And I'm not presenting that as historically accurate, because when I looked at his obituary, it said he came from a very prominent loyalist family in Amherst. So I'm guessing that story is apocryphal.
I guess you never know when you're looking back, right?
Yeah, that's the trouble. And every village has its stories.
Right.
But, he built it in 1831. And the work in it is really quite lovely, the hand-cut stone. And it did have the original slate roof. It's been changed since then. And the windows were the original glass. And you know how you can see the patterns in the glass where it has actually slowly sagged a bit over the century and plus years. And Mum restored the original gardens. So, you know, you'd walk outside and it was full of honeysuckle and roses and lilies. And it... and then the houses just down the road, Edward Chandler had built for his sons, so it was really almost a family compound.
Oh, right. There was two sons, were there? They each got a house. I read somewhere, was there a double wedding and they each got a house?
Yeah, and then there's another one across the road, which I gather was his third son's house. I hadn't realized that. But,
Wow. A Chandler village.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But he was extremely influential in the province and involved in Confederation. So that was kind of his center.
Yeah, VIP. Dorchester, like we know it now, as it's a small village, about 1,000 people maybe. What was it like when you lived there?
It was small. It wasn't quite as small because then the guards at the penitentiary had to live within a couple miles radius of the pen, so they lived in the villages essentially. So it was a bit busier, and there were more shops and things like that. But once they started putting malls in Moncton, that was when things really changed and people started shopping there. And the bus transit didn't use that route anymore. So with no transit and big stores moving in that close, it kind of died for a while as the stores left and there was no new industry replacing. And that was partly when all the projects of restoring the old houses got started. The first one was the Keeler House, and it was a centennial project. But it was built in, what, 1813, I think it was. And so the history goes back, and the reason there are so many really beautiful houses, even though some of them eventually, you know, were left empty and things like that over the years, but it had been the center for shipping and lumber, and it was the shire town of the county, so it had the courthouses and was very much a going concern. It had hotels, restaurants.
Wow, yeah. So the Dorchester of yore was a different place, yeah.
Yes, you wouldn't recognize it.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm curious about, you know, the challenges of owning a historic home like that. I don't know what kind of extra challenges your parents would have had. It was designated as a National Historic Site in 1971.
They got that done.
Yeah. Did that make it easier to maintain such a historic house or more difficult? I always wonder about that.
Because of the way the rules worked in New Brunswick, and it may have changed, but at the time, it really made virtually no difference at all. It wasn't highly regulated. It was nice they said, oh, yes, that's an interesting building. We should put a plaque. But there were no regulations. You know, in some places, if it's designated historical site, you can't change things and certain standards and things. But in the case of... New Brunswick at the time, there were very few regulations, so it was really more of a commemoration than anything.
Now, do you know much about the house as it would be today? I guess Ivan Ng would have bought it from your family in 1997?
Yeah, he had it since then, but as far as I could tell, other than the first few years he had it, it's been essentially closed up. So it has sat empty for a long time, but it's going up for sale, and the specs have been online, so there are pictures of the interior, and it has changed considerably.
Oh, really? Okay. So there was alterations, I guess, since he bought it.
Yeah. I wouldn't have recognized it.
Oh, wow. So it's significant. Mm-hmm. Any hopes for the future of, you know, who might come along to buy it? Are you interested at all?
It would be really fun to buy it, but where would I get the money? Where would I get a job to pay for it? Probably not. It would be cool, though.
I guess it's very much a labor of love, yeah, to own a house like that at this point.
Yeah. Because it's big, it's expensive to heat, it's, you know, there's the upkeep. It is quite a thing to take on.
I guess we hope that, you know, somebody can buy it and take care of it, and so that it doesn't sort of, I don't know, go the way of some houses that end up left vacant.
Yeah, I think the village is quite interested in what might happen to it, because it, you know, it's such a part of the village, and it was all, we always did a lot of historical things there, and, you know, people came and went over the years. It's a well-known house, and was always kind of open to the public, lots of receptions, you know, fundraising for the museum and things like that. I did my first fundraiser when I was 6 years old, and we all wore historic costumes, and people came and we put on a fashion show of vintage costumes for them and things like that. So it's always been part of the community.
Wow, it sounds like your family really embraced the, you know, that role of caretakers of that historic property.
Yeah, very much so. They were instrumental in the original setup of the Westmoreland Historical Society, and it was something that they were quite passionate about, and getting the projects going for restoring some of the other buildings in the town, the Bell Inn, Keeler House, the Presbyterian Church, the building across from the Bell Inn where the library is, a couple others. They were all projects of restoration that the Historical Society and a lot of people in the town worked on, and that sort of thing. So it's been quite a long project.
All right. Well, I mean, thanks so much for telling us about your ties with Chandler House or Rockland. I have to ask, like, it's called Chandler House for obvious reasons, because it was built for Edward Baron Chandler. Where and why is it called Rockland? Where does that name come from?
Underneath the house, and as I remember, it ran right through the village and fairly far out, is a massive shelf of rock, and the house is actually built on the rock. It's as solid as you can get.
Well, Katie, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today.
Oh, you're welcome. It was fun.
All right. Take care. That was Katie Yeoman, former resident of Rockland, also known as Chandler House. The historic Dorchester home is up for sale with an offer pending as of Monday. That's it for CHMA's Tantramar Report for this Tuesday, August 24th. Remember, you can always get in touch with your concerns at news@chmafm.com. I'm Erica Butler. Thanks for listening.